Hello and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Dave Waldron, and today we're going to get dramatic. Mellow dramatic, to be exact. I'm here with Melanie Cross and Christy Hedrick with the company Alaska Sound Celebration. And these two are the producers for the Fur Rondi melodrama that is showing during the festivities in Anchorage right now. We're currently here in their rehearsal space, so hopefully we get to listen in on some of the show and get some audio for you there. Melanie and Christy, thank you both for being with me today.
Thank you for having us. We love to talk to people about our show.
Our favorite time of year and our busiest time of year.
I believe it. So, okay, the show this year is titled Peaceful. Well, it was. No, I'm not doing that, right? Let's hear a proper delivery of that.
Peaceful. Well, it was.
So let's start with some basics and maybe a definition of what melodrama is. I think most people are pretty familiar with drama. So what is the difference between drama and melodrama?
I think probably the size of the action and the actor's commitment. There's a gigantic difference between, oh, I'm tired, and, oh, I'm so tired. It's mostly larger than life. Every single thing you do has to be three times bigger than you think it needs to be. Which, as a person who's formerly been an actor on the show, I may or may not have heard once or twice from the director. Bigger, bigger, more, more.
She's got it all in a nutshell, I'm telling you. There's a lot more slapstick, too. You know, these are comedies. It's all about fun and laughing and having a good time.
Generally speaking, when someone is, like, overacting, that's considered a bad thing. But it's safe to say that in melodrama, the goal is to kind of overact. Is the goal to act so bad that it's actually good?
I think it depends on your character. I've definitely played parts where the worse I was, the funnier it was. So this is a family-friendly show, and our goal is just that everybody has as much fun as they possibly can in just that 2 hours. So we try to pack it with a lot of physical comedy, a lot of jokes, a lot of laughter, and sometimes you got to go over the top to really pull that off.
And it wouldn't be a melodrama without a little bit of double entendre in there.
You're not wrong. Yeah. For sure, definitely. But we do keep it family friendly.
How fun is it to put together a melodrama? I mean, compared to like a classic play or a conventional singing performance? I mean, like what's the writing process like in a melodrama?
We actually solicit scripts 1 to 2 years in advance. And we have reached out to a lot of different people, just organizations here in Anchorage. We actually, the playwright this year is from Minnesota.
He has recently moved, so.
I feel like it was Minnesota, but yeah, he did recently move. And he's written 2 or 3 of them for us. What he's actually is related to a woman who used to be in our chorus, and she moved away. So that was kind of how we got the contact. We have had a woman in our chorus has written several of them. The founder of the melodrama, Sue Hahn, who passed away last year, actually wrote the script for us for 20-something years. I can't remember exactly how many, but most of them have been written by her, so.
So should we expect something a little different this year than what we're used to, or?
I would say this is pretty, I mean, it's still melodrama. So this one is a turn of the century. We've had years in the past where we had special themes. We had a Minions year during one of the years that the Minions movie came out. We had a Pirates year, and then we had a Pirates versus Gold Miners, a reality show.
Zombies. Let's not forget about the zombies. There were zombies 1 year as well.
Yes. The Mad Monsters of Matsylvania or something. The chorus members usually dress up. We have a group of chorus members that sings, and they dress up as whatever characters would be in the area where the action is happening. So we've had people be 70s disco, yellow minions, miners and trappers,
Vikings,
pirates. It's been, it's a little bit of everything.
Our last melodrama was Jill and Red's Bodacious Quest. So if you know are a Bill and Ted fan, it was a little bit of a parody on that. And we were, the chorus was all futuristic instead of, the 80s look. We did futuristic, which was fun.
I am a Bill and Ted fan. Yeah, I'm sorry that I missed that one. How does someone train to be a melodramatic actor? I mean, is it just acting, but extra? We sort of talked about that already. But, I mean, is there any kind of, like, formal training for melodrama?
You know, I'm sure some of our actors that we've had in the past have had training of some sort. One of our actors who's our villain this year has done a lot of acting. He's been doing it for well over 20 years. But a lot of times the members of our chorus are just, they only get their experience through characterization in our chorus and the things that we do. One of the things that's different about Alaska Sound Celebration is we're a chorus, not a choir. And that means there's a little bit more action involved than just standing on stage and singing. And so we learn a lot of character from that. And that helps them prepare for getting prepared for a melodrama and being over the top. And some of the actresses that we've had that come into the chorus and do the melodrama have done drama in college, or they did drama in high school, so they've got a little bit. But we don't have what I would consider necessarily professional actors that do this. So,
yeah, the only acting I've ever done in my life was in the melodrama. I was in a play once in high school, but I was in the chorus, and I came to melodrama. I joined the chorus right in the middle of melodrama season in 2002, and absolutely fell in love. I was in that auditorium or in that hall for 15 minutes of the audience squealing and laughing and throwing popcorn. I was like, okay, I found my people. And the only training I've ever had has been the director's input when I've played a character. So my family would say that I'm sort of drawn to it naturally, but you know, whatever. Don't judge me.
She's definitely a character, that's for sure. And I would like to restate the part about professionals. I mean, it depends on your definition of professional, right? They say if you get paid to do what you're doing, then you're a professional, right? So they're pros in that sense, but we don't have any, you know, people who've spent their life dedicated to be an actor or an actress that are in our crews. You know, they all have other jobs outside of the community art scene, so it's been a blessing for us to be able to have those people join us, though. Generally, the female characters come from within the chorus, and the male characters are members of our community, and we've had some that are regulars over the years, and we get new faces. We've got a new face on stage with us this year we're really excited about, so a couple of them.
Is it safe to say that that's one of the real appeals of melodrama, is that, you know, it doesn't take itself too seriously and that it's accessible to just about anybody? Like, you could just jump right into it and try it out without this formal training.
Absolutely, absolutely. I, like Melanie, have had zero. I didn't do drama in high school. I didn't even do choir in high school or college. And I've been a character in a melodrama and had a blast with it and got to be a Southern madam. And, you know, just run with it and have fun. So you have to have some personality behind you to, you know, be a little outgoing, but definitely not anything that you really have to be super schooled on, I guess is what I want to say, yeah.
So, Melanie, you mentioned that this dates all the way back to your childhood, the melodrama. How did you get involved in it in the first place?
I actually joined Alaska Sound Celebration because my sister was in one of the former choruses. We joined two Anchorage choruses together and became Alaska Sound Celebration. My sister was in one of the former choruses, and I had just moved back to town. And she said, you need to come to chorus with me so we can have something to do together. And I was like, okay, I guess we could have something to do together. And I was in the room, again, about 10 minutes of chorus, and was like, oh, I think I may have found my people. I've loved singing since I was a child, so it was just a great thing to do with my sister. And she ended up moving away, and so she left the chorus. And I have not left since 2002. Just can't get rid of me.
And Christy, you mentioned that you've been in one yourself. So how did you get involved?
A friend of mine heard an ad on the radio that this chorus was doing open auditions. And I've always enjoyed singing to the radio. And we all think that we're singers when we sing to the radio, but none of us are necessarily really sure about that. But I loved it so much that I was like, oh, I should check this out. And so I came to a rehearsal when they were having a membership drive. That was in 2012. And I think 2013 was when we did a mini melodrama. So it wasn't the one that was happening during Ferrandi. We did one as part of our fall show and a private corporate event that we were asked to do one for, and I did that. And I don't know, it just was one of those things that they just, it's like a community. You know, they pull you in, they treat you like family, and if you enjoy singing and love having a good time, you just can't leave.
Sure. Yeah, I've been singing with my, I have three sisters, and I have sung with my mom and my sister since I was 4, 5, and 6. We've been singing at church, at carnivals, at, you stand still long enough, I'm going to sing to you. So.
Well, speaking of kids, I have two of my own, and so naturally I am accustomed to a level of drama and dramatic performances. When should I tell my kids they're being melodramatic as opposed to just dramatic?
I mean, probably, I feel like parents can do anything they want. Particularly depends on the age of your children. I mean, I would say my son was pretty melodramatic at 3. Also, we are now in middle school, and the drama friend is so melodramatic. So, yeah, I fully support using that term.
I think when your child is throwing a fit on the floor because you gave them the blue cup instead of the red cup, that's being melodramatic.
Well, let's talk about the show this year. It's titled Peaceful. Well, it was. What is the plot, and what are some of the characters we can expect to see?
See, here's the other thing. There's always like a surprise twist, so you can't give away everything. But it's pretty much your turn of the century. The bad guy comes into town and tries to steal everything from the heroine and take off with her and tie her to the railroad tracks. And the good guy comes in and rescues her. And her grandma's there trying to give everybody a hard time. There's a lot of music. There's a lot of singing. It's pretty typical turn of the century.
Yeah, there's a train involved this year. So we actually are going to have a train that maybe is going to be a concern for that heroine tied to the railroad tracks.
Might be.
We have Teddy Bear, and Nick Nefarious is our villain this year. Edna Brown, Lulu Bell Brown, and Georgine Nefarious.
You never know.
So you have a nefarious couple. Is that, well, but there has been a spoiler. That's all right.
We do. Yeah, we do have a nefarious couple, and I think he is definitely a bad guy, and I think she doesn't really know what in the world she's doing. I think that's probably par for the course.
Well, you said turn of the century, and just for a moment, I thought you meant 21st century. Then you said railroad track, lady tied to the railroad track. So this is turn of the 20th century, safe to say.
Yes, turn of the 20th century. I forget that we should probably clarify that. It's not quite the 2000s, but
the Victorian age, basically. Yes. You know, late 1800s, early 1900s, when Alaska was not a state.
Since we're currently here at one of the rehearsals, let's see if we can listen into some of the actors.
Get married.
Oh, shucks, maybe.
Any pretty girls come to mind?
Well, now, let me think. Dozens of girls would storm up. I had to lock my door.
Somehow you couldn't warm up.
What was it that controlled me? What kept my love lively?
My intuition told me you'd come on the sea.
Lady, listen to the rhythm of my heartbeat, and you'll get just what I mean.
What is your favorite thing about melodrama? Like, what is it about it that draws you to it?
I think for me, my favorite thing about melodrama is the spirit in the room. There's something about getting a group of people together who may not necessarily know each other, but they're all laughing and having a really good time. We work really hard to produce this show, but we also just have a lot of fun doing it. And it's very, very fun to see the light in a new person's eyes, somebody who's never been there before. They walk in, they're like, what in the world is happening in this room? And they're in the room 20 minutes and they're like, oh, this is amazing. I feel alive. I think particularly because we've been shut down for a couple of years. I know that I am so excited for that feeling of walking in and having the energy of that crowd. And people who have been longing to see something for the last couple of years and are ready to just laugh and giggle and let some of the day-to-day cares, just let them go and enjoy yourself.
Wow, she kind of said it all. But I love music, so I love the musical part of the melodrama. And what's great is it's not just the chorus off to the side singing. The actors are singing as well. And there's always such comedy in that music, and the crowd really gets into it. And often the music is stuff that they recognize that maybe we've even changed the words to fit the show that's going on. So the music and the popcorn. I love the popcorn. I never thought I would get to be involved in a show where you were allowed to throw food. Mind you, that's the only food you can throw is the popcorn. But there is something about, it's like Melanie said, being in that room with a bunch of strangers, but by the end of the night, it's like you recognize that face and you recognize that face. Oh, you're the one that threw a bag of popcorn at me the first thing when I walked in today. Or you're the person that somebody dumped a whole bag in the back of your hoodie. You know, you just, and all that fun. And there's like these competitions between like the back of the room and the front of the room. And it's just a good time. It's so much fun.
So you definitely both touched on the interactive part of the melodrama. We should definitely mention to the listeners that this is an interactive show, far more than like a traditional play. Popcorn is sold to attendants, and then they're actually encouraged to throw the popcorn at the actors and to boo the villains. When did the show become such an interactive experience?
Well, like I said, I joined in 2002, and it has been ever since I've been in it. It's just not like any other theater experience. The goal is to get the audience to be that other actor in the show, right? Your whole goal is to get them pulled in and sucked in and get them right up there on the stage with you. So we have the chorus holds actual cue cards. So we have signs that when a character comes out, somebody holds up a sign so that the people who are new know what their reaction needs to be. So we do kind of lead that reaction. And it really doesn't take long. We get about 15 minutes into the show and the audience most of the time has taken over, particularly on a Friday or a Saturday night. It doesn't hurt that there's a bar at the back of the room that we encourage folks to utilize on their breaks and, you know, grab yourself a plastic cup and let's have a good time.
Yeah, the audience being interactive is one of those things that when it's not your traditional sit-down theater. It's not a Broadway show. There's this interaction and there's this relationship that starts to build from the beginning of the show until the end to where, you know, they get to know the characters and they know what buttons they can push with those characters, not just with the boos or the hissing and the cheers for the villain, but like when there's, you know, when there's an inside joke that's said, you'll hear audience members, you know, shout something back and it's encouraged. No one is going to say, oh, you can't do that, because that's the fun of it. You get to be part of the show.
It's actually really cool, too, to see the evolution of the show. I was in the show one year when we had the pirates, the group of pirates and the group of gold miners together. I got brutally sick one year. And by Sunday, I woke up and we have two shows on Sunday. I woke up and had no voice at all. I texted the director, was like, so I can't speak. The musical director immediately started texting me. It was like, do not call me, but I have a series of questions to ask you. And then I need you to do these things. And she said, don't worry about it. We're going to be fine, because I was one of the two main female characters that was playing the madam. And we had a song we had to do competing against each other. And I was like, I can't not sing. So I saved my voice all day. And by the time I got to the theater, the sound guy was like, okay, we're going to adjust everything we can adjust. And it took about 5 minutes into the show and the audience realized she's really sick, and they would quiet way down when I would step forward to say something. And it was like we were just this little team. I had obviously not said anything to anyone, but they were right there in our pockets. And I think that the interactive part of the show yields that. Like it lends itself to that.
As an incredibly polite and astute audience, you had there. That's, that's awesome. I was thinking it would be kind of fun if you would give us a melodrama demonstration. And I actually printed out a script here.
Oh, this is
if you'd be willing. It's a bit of a classic. I would say most people are familiar with this one, but I'm guessing most people haven't heard it in melodramatic form. So why don't you? There's one for each of you.
These words are epic.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
All right. Are you ready? Gonna get weird really fast. You can't touch this.
You can't touch this.
You can't touch this.
You can't touch this.
My music hits me so hard. It makes me say, oh, my Lord. Thank you for blessing me with a mind to rhyme and to hyped feet.
It feels good when you know you're down. A super dope homeboy from the Oak Town. And I'm known as such. And this is a beat you can't touch.
I told you, homeboy, you can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living, and you know, you can't touch this.
Look in my eyes, man. You can't touch this. Yo, let me bust the funky lyrics. You can't touch this.
Wow. All right.
That was awful.
Oh, that was so good. So, I mean, we've established that you are excellent sports. Thank you for that.
That was epic. I cannot wait for chorus members
to hear
feedback
that.
on this interview. They're going to be like, what happened before the interview?
Well, thank you for that performance. That was amazing. After this short break, we'll be back to talk more about the Ferrandi melodrama with Melanie Cross and Christy Hedrick of Alaska Sound Celebration. And we'll be treating you to some archival recordings of the melodrama shows from years past. I'm your host, Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this. Touch this. You can't touch this. My music hits me so hard, makes me say, oh my Lord, thank you for blessing me with a mind to rhyme and to hype me. It feels good when you know you're down. A super dope homeboy from the Oak Town, and I'm known as such, and this is a beat you can't touch. I told you, homeboy, you can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living, and you know you can't touch this. Look in my eyes, man, you can't touch this. Yo, let me bust the funky lyrics. Touch this. Fresh new kicks and bands, you got it like that. Now you know you want to dance, so move out of your seat and get a box.
Give me a mess of extras by mistake. You know, I would give you a pair, but your uncle already got you some. My niece, Chastity Black Belt. She must have come in early on that train full of gold dust.
How do you do?
How do I do what? Oh, sorry. Well, what is wrong with you?
Whatever do you mean, you vicious old viper, you? I just have an occasional personality switch. It works well for politicians, I hear.
Oh, no, she's
going to
do it again.
All right,
quick, out.
Oh, come out from behind the counter, you silly man. I didn't even go into my stance because it was a double sneeze. Sneeze, I'm back.
Well, I think I'm going to have to corral my thoughts on this one. Say, how about a nice cup of coffee while we sort all this out?
Oh, that's a good idea. I would loving nice cup of coffee as long as I can put a little something in it to sweeten it. Be for booze, yeah. I'll put a little booze in mine.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Dave Waldron, and today we're talking with Melanie Cross and Christy Hedrick of Alaska Sound Celebration. They are the producers of this year's Ferrandi melodrama, which is titled Peaceful. Well, it was. So when did the Ferrandi melodrama begin? Ferrandi's been around almost 90 years now, and I know that the melodrama is a pretty long-standing tradition.
So we are celebrating, technically, the 32nd annual melodrama this year. So this is the 32nd live show. We did a virtual show the first year of COVID. So we counted that as our 31st. But we skipped a year because we did not have a virtual or a live show last year. So in the number of years that we would have been involved, we would normally be at 33. But this is technically 32. So 32 years.
Have you heard any stories of what those early shows were like, the melodrama from 33 years ago?
Oh, many. Our director, Peggy Benton, the director of Alaska Sound Celebration Chorus, was in the very first melodrama that our chorus produced. And she found out she was expecting. As a result of that melodrama, she was the heroine and she was tied to the railroad tracks and sat up after being tied to the railroad tracks and thought, oh my goodness, I feel really faint. That's weird. Well, turns out there was a reason. And now all of us know exactly how old her son is because we can keep track based on the year of the melodrama.
The melodrama is by far one of the most popular for Ferrandi events. I know I've been a victim of waiting too long to get my tickets, only to find out they've completely sold out every show. Why do you think that is? Why is this show so popular?
I think it's because it's unique. I think it's because it's part of the winter festival, and I know all of us as Alaskans are done with the winter by February, March. So I think we're all looking for something different and something fun and something that will pique our interest. But I also think I think we have found the perfect balance of family friendly, and yet we've got those double entendres in there for the adults so they're not, you know, bored watching a cartoon, and it's completely unlike anything else you've ever seen.
Yeah, and it's so unique. We have repeat people every year. The people who come to the melodrama, I would say at a minimum 50% of our audience are repeat customers. They've been coming year after year after year. I think that someone commented on one of our social media posts recently that they've been to the melodrama every single year that it's happened. So that's somebody that's been coming back for 32 years to come see the melodrama. And they enjoy it so much because it's full of laughter and humor and this freedom for a show. It's not, and no one else, and they never know what the story's going to be like. That's the other thing. You know, when you buy a ticket to a Broadway show, there's a plot that you already know about. And the melodrama is full of surprises when you come to it. You don't quite know what you're going to get. And that makes the fun, makes the show even more interesting and exciting and something to look forward to each year.
Ah, no wonder you were so tight-lipped on the plot. I like it. All right. Surprises are good. A lot of the Ferrandi events are dripping with Alaska lore and history. What are some of the Alaska themes people can find built into the characters or the scenes or the songs without, of course, giving too much away?
Well, we work really hard to every now and then just throw in a current event joke. So you may hear jokes about areas of Alaska that people may or may not enjoy living in. You may hear jokes about some of the faux pas of our area politicians. I mean, not that they would ever make a faux pas, but, you know, the bridge to nowhere, those kinds of things get mentioned a lot, and just as little side jokes. And we have had many of our melodramas have been set in, you know, this very small Alaska town on the side of such and such mountain. And it, basically, our setting is always a small rural area of Alaska that ends up being a lot like a small rural area of Kansas. It just has an Alaska name. So
I'm really curious to know this year if we're going to have any, you know, mentions of the Chinese spy balloon.
It wouldn't surprise me. You know, I mean,
we have great directors. David Block has been working with us for many years now. I've kind of lost count of how many times he's directed the show for us, but David is really good about taking that script and just adding a little bit of salt and pepper to it and making it fit Alaska and pulling in some of those current events and making it just a little bit more interesting and giving, it gets us extra laughs. He's got such a way about getting the extra laughs from the audience. And it's all behind the scenes, but he does an amazing job and we love working with him. Melanie and I have been super busy this year, so I want to make sure we take an opportunity to also mention Stacy Sheely. Stacy is not a chorus member, but she's been to visit us before, been to a couple of rehearsals, and she's like, I just love you ladies so much. I feel like I want to do something. So she has actually been working behind the scenes a little bit with us as well. So I want to make sure that we talk about Stacy. But in terms of the things that happen, like, it takes a village, and we couldn't do it without everybody that we have here.
You mentioned it a little bit. This is the first in-person show since COVID, right? And so in 3 years, what have the past few years been like for the company? I'm sure you need this performance to keep the company going.
Oh, we absolutely do. The Melodrama is our largest fundraiser of the year, and we rely on the money that we make at this show to help us support our annual budget. We do a great deal of continuing education for our singers, and it costs a lot of money to bring people up and hold master classes. And we also have outreach programs in the community that we can get grant funds to help us do, but it's preparing for those events that we need the extra funds for. We actually made it through the last Melodrama we had in person was in 2020, and the Melodrama wrapped on Saturday, the 14th of March. On Sunday, the 15th of March, we loaded out, and on Monday, the 16th of March, they shut everything down. So it was a rather tense final weekend of that show. Really concerned about, like, we don't know if people are just going to give up and stay home, what they're going to do. We had some people who canceled, and we offered them refunds, and every single person just said, oh, consider it a donation from the chorus. And I think that's one of the other things about this show that is so magical is the amazing outpouring of community support that we get. It's we get to feed the community with all of the fun and the laughter, but they feed it right back to us. And it's kind of a mutual admiration society.
Yeah, and we've been blessed with some really good sponsors too. So those 2 years that we didn't have anything happening, Melanie mentioned, you know, grants. I want to give a shout out to the Atwood Foundation, because the Atwood Foundation is how we survived the last 2 years of being able to put on our fall show this year. We do two youth outreaches during that fall show called Celebrate the Music. We do a Sing for Scholarship program where we audition 20 local high school students, and five of them will then perform on our show, and they earn scholarship money. And then we do Alaska Acapella University, which is for boys and girls, and it's an all-day workshop the day of our show where they come in and they learn music. They learn to do what we do on stage and sing barbershop music. And if it weren't for the Atwood Foundation, we would not have been successful in being able to continue doing those things that we did the last couple of years.
And you said you did do virtual shows while the pandemic was happening. I imagine that's kind of challenging with a show that's so interactive. Obviously, you can't throw popcorn through the monitor. But so how did that work out?
It was great. We had a mini melodrama that we had done for a local. I mentioned this earlier. We did a corporate event. We had a mini melodrama. And then we performed it on our fall show. So it was a very small audience that saw that show. It was not a melodrama-sized audience. And we only performed it that one time. So we took that and turned it into a virtual show that we offered online. You could go online. It was obviously a much reduced ticket price because it was online. It wasn't a live show. We encouraged people to hold viewings if they wanted with their family and to show us throwing popcorn in their houses. And we had some people do that, which was really fun. One of our actors helped us do a an intro to that melodrama. It was fantastic. If you didn't get to see the virtual melodrama, Scott Kober's one of our actors, and he did like a masterpiece theater type intro that we came up with, and he played all of the characters, including the female characters, because we were still distancing at that point, right? We had to make sure that we didn't have a lot of people. So it was me filming, Scott acting, Melanie holding cue cards, and I think we had one other person in the room, our director, I think, just to get this intro so we could have something to add to that show and make it a little bit more fun than just watching a recording. And it was challenging, but it was still fun, and we had a good time, and we still were able to do our raffle that year as well. You know, Alaska allowed online gaming due to the pandemic, which had not happened previously, and they're still allowing that right now. So it meant you didn't have to have paper tickets to hand out to people for safety's sake, right? And people weren't getting together. So we still did that. But it was fantastic. We had a lot of good feedback about it. But I will tell you that the next year, everyone said, please tell me you're doing it in person. Please tell us you're doing it in person. We want the melodrama back. And unfortunately, in 2022, the Omicron variant just blew up right before we were supposed to open. And we just knew for the safety of our community and the safety of our members, we could not put the show on last year.
It was pretty heartbreaking. Last year, I was actually one of the years where I tried to co-produce an act, and we made it through a month of rehearsals. So for 1 year, it was like the 1 year I actually had my lines down after a month. I was very sad, but also I think we had such great support from the community, just saying, you know, you guys made the right decision and we totally support you, and giving us those kudos online so we could still feel that love. It was great.
So safe to say you're very excited to be back and in person. I mean, are there nerves going around? I mean, you haven't done this in a while, so.
I feel like it's natural that there would be nerves, but I think everybody is just so excited and so thrilled to finally be able to be together again that we have made a few changes. We have recorded during COVID. We made a recording of the chorus music, and so we'll have a smaller contingent, and we'll be able to utilize some of our recordings for that group to sing with, which will lower the number of people we have in the hall, trying to keep everybody really safe and trying to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, we just went through something serious, but it's not necessarily all sunshine and roses. We still need to be responsible and be proactive about everybody's safety. So, you know, our time in the pandemic was really well used. We did a lot of education, and we all learned a great deal about Zoom, far, far more about computers than I ever wanted to know. But it was really great to see our leadership teams band together and use the situation we had that wasn't super fun for our good and actually grow through the situation. It was great.
Is there anything special going on this year that people haven't gotten to experience in the past?
What's really great about this show is we have a really unique partnership with the venue. We hold our show at the Heritage Theater at the 49th State Brewing Company downtown. And somebody came up with the idea, like, I don't know, 8 or 10 years ago. And we haven't been able to do it every year, but we have a signature cocktail this year. I think Christy mentioned the train. And so this year they are working on the Chugga Chugga for us. And that, for me, that's one of my favorite parts about the show, is I always get a seat in the last show at the bar, and I always order a or two, or we're not going to talk about how many, signature cocktails to enjoy while we're there. So
do we know what goes into a chugga chugga, or is that top secret?
That's actually even top secret from us. We just tell the bar, so this is what's going on in the show. What if we did a drink around this? And we literally never know what we're going to get. Sometimes it's sweet, sometimes it's savory.
We had the Golden Screamer a few years ago during the Gold Singer one, and that was like a James Bond-themed type melodrama.
Yeah, so it was a shaken, not stirred. Whatever.
Like a martini.
Words are not for me. I'm just shaking my hand.
You'll know what it is when you order it. The ingredients will not be secret when you order it. But we do not know what will be in the drink yet, because they are working on that. Their master bartenders are creating it as we speak.
I'm getting thirsty already. What are some of the other projects that Alaska Sound Celebration works on? Like, what are you typically doing when there's not a melodrama?
So we are a part of Sweet Adeline's International. It's a worldwide organization, and the whole world is broken up into regions. Alaska Sound Celebration is part of Region 13, which includes Alaska, Washington, Oregon, part of Montana, and Idaho. Those are the states? Yeah, I think I got them all right. We have regional competitions each spring, and when a chorus wins the regional competition, they are invited to attend the international competition. Alaska Sound Celebration did a video submission last spring, because last spring they weren't holding the competitions in person yet. We did a video submission and we won our regional competition last spring. So we have been invited to attend the international competition in October 30th through November 4th in Louisville. Am I saying that correctly?
Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville, Kentucky. So right now there's about 50 of us who are working hard on our contest pieces and getting ourselves in shape for that. And we have coaches coming this year, and we are really, really excited for what's coming in the future.
And I mentioned earlier that we do a fall show. We just had our first in-person fall show since COVID happened. We didn't get to do 2020 or 21. So Celebrate the Music is in, how many years has that been going on, Melanie?
It is we're getting ready to do, I think, the 18th Sing for Scholarship contest, and I think it's the 11th or 12th. 12th annual this fall, Alaska A Cappella University.
I'll let her go with that. So, but Celebrate the Music is a wonderful way for us to just present our music to the community. We always have a guest artist as well. Sometimes that's someone local from the community, which helps promote other performers in the community. We've had dance troupes on there before. We've had local singing artists. We had the Dan Mack Band 1 year, I know. There's been a big variety of performers that come in are on the show with us, but we also like to bring up award-winning barbershop music from the lower 48 as well. So a lot of times our guest artists will be a winning men or women's quartet that comes up and performs with us, which is always a great time as well. And sometimes there are clinicians for our youth as well, which is even more fun. So we do that. We will sing anywhere someone will hire us to sing if you ask, and the number is right, you know, we'll definitely come and sing for you. But we do the Alaska State Fair every year. We have done community holiday singouts as well. Last year, we were still in pandemic mode, so we went to the airport and we sung in different areas of the airport because we really couldn't go to any of the hospitals or anything like that we've done in the past and the fire stations. We've done naturalization ceremonies, singing in new American citizens, which is just an amazing thing to be able to do. And the national anthem, we just recently did a UAA hockey game and sang the national anthem. So whatever is available out there and we are able to get members gathered up with a good balance of sound, we will do it.
Well, I want to thank you both, Melanie Cross and Christy Hedrick. They are the producers for the melodrama titled Peaceful. Well, it was. The show is running right now through Ferrandi. After this short break, we'll be back with State of Art. I'm Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art. Welcome to State of Art on Hometown Alaska, your weekly dose of Anchorage arts and culture. I'm Ammon Swenson. Coming up, we'll hear from Matthew Bertner. He's a composer, musician, and sound artist who blends the arts and sciences into works meant to deepen our understanding and connection to the natural world. He's currently an artist in residence at the Anchorage Museum, and his most recent album is called Icefield. Before we get into my interview, let's take a quick listen to You Sink Into the Singing Snow off that newest album. Had you always been into music and stuff as a kid?
I was really interested in sound, yeah. I'd always thought about sounds, human sounds like music, but also just environmental sounds. And a lot of my early memories are acoustic and they're nature-based sounds. Mm. So my mom taught us piano and then we switched to musical instruments when you do that in elementary school, and I chose saxophone. I was really lucky that there was a duo that came to my elementary school, and they played theremin, or a kind of homemade electronic theremin thing, yeah. And alto saxophone. And, you know, I found myself for the next decade, like, working on electronic music and saxophone performance. So that was pretty fortuitous chance at O'Malley Elementary to attend an assembly that was very influential on me. So I played music, and I did a lot of practicing outdoors because, you know, I was pretty self-conscious about making a lot of noise, and I have a big family. And so I found it really nice to practice outside because I could just play really loudly. No one could hear me. It was just swallowed up by the environment, and kind of playing in the wind and in different kind of weather conditions. It kind of made me comfortable with, like, listening to the sounds of a person in harmony with the sounds of the Alaskan environment.
Yeah.
And so those wilderness sounds, or those, you know, natural soundscapes, were very close to my understanding of what music could be.
Yeah, there wasn't like a distinct separation in your mind of like, no, this sound is just a sound, this is music. Like,
yeah.
It was all kind of one thing in your mind.
Yeah, it was kind of, you know, I was very respectful of the Alaskan wilderness. Like, I was in awe of it, actually, in terms of sound. This is now, you know, I wanted music to be as powerful and engaging and just kind of like moving as the natural soundscapes that we have up here. You know, the sounds of like the wind, like just rushing through the mountains, or the storms on the bay. And nothing that I heard in music, at least that I heard, could approach that kind of power and that kind of moving quality. It was like, it's not just that it was loud and wild and noisy, because like a lot of music is loud and wild and noisy, and you can turn up an amplifier and it can, you know, be louder than the wind. But it was more like it was powerful because it wasn't for humans. Like like it was overwhelming us because it didn't like care about us. And so it wasn't pandering to our aesthetics or like trying to be for us. And that was the kind of power that I thought was really exciting about natural environmental music.
Totally. There's just something much more like epic and primal to it, as opposed to plunking around on a piano.
Yeah. And you can participate in that by, you know, listening to it and immersing yourself in it. But you can't really like control it, because it's, you know, it's a system outside of human. So this was like a big thing for me, this idea of trying to bring the natural world, that inspiration from the natural world, into the musical space, and like really involve human music in that natural space and kind of blend the two. So I spent a lot of time working on that.
So, you know, you're described as an eco-acoustician. You know, what does that mean? Is that kind of like what you've been getting at? Is that kind of combination of the natural sounds with music, or is it a little bit more related to just kind of the natural world and stuff like that?
Well, it's I would say that ecoacoustic music is the theory of music that now underlines my way of working. It's a field that I've developed for the last 25 years. Ecoacoustics as a kind of big field came out of the sciences. It was defined first in the sciences. And what excited me about ecoacoustics was that it was focused on using new emerging technologies to understand the systems of nature through sound. So like that could be through, you know, a really nice microphone recording the sound of the water or something like that. But it also could be the use of a computer or computational algorithms to synthesize processes that don't make sound in a way that we call it sonification. So you'll take like, you know, like I've written music that uses ice extent in the Arctic. So we've, you know, for the last 40 years, scientists have measured the amount of ice in the Arctic. So I'll take that data and put it through a music synthesizer, and then we can listen back to the sound of the ice in the Arctic over 40 years. But we, of course, compress it down to like 4 minutes or something.
Yeah, almost like an audio time lapse or something.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's a, you know, that's a process that doesn't make sound in the environment, but we can listen to it and it can become part of ecoacoustics. So I was very excited about this idea of using the kind of science of acoustics, but applying it for music and really creating kind of a new music theory.
Your most recent album is called Icefield. You mentioned that you recently had the release. It's tough to describe, but I'll kind of give it a go. Just, you know, broad strokes, just kind of epic soundscapes, underscored by like nature with some flowing orchestral arrangements and maybe a touch of the human voice. Just kind of, and yeah, that's my very terrible way that's of awesome. Trying to describe yeah. that. But you know, what's it like to put an album like that together? Like, how do you make the pieces fit in a cohesive manner with these kind of all these different aspects?
Yeah, I love that question because it's it gets to something about, you know, all my albums really are collections of very different kinds of expressions around a topic. Rather than trying to make like something that feels very unified and kind of just, I don't know, singular, I like to point, again, it's maybe that like polytemporality. I like to point to different kind of like aesthetic relationships to a topic. Mm-hmm. So Icefield's the second album in a pair. The first one was called Glacier Music. And I studied the ecoacoustics of glaciers in Alaska, wrote music about those things. And then Icefield is kind of moving up the glacier to the headwaters of the glacier to the source.
Yeah.
And it really looks at these big bodies of ice. And so that was really, you know, very interesting. And the pieces I would describe as the classes of pieces I would describe as climate change songs. Those are from the Oxalock Opera. There's several songs on the album that are from this larger opera. And then sound artworks that are, you know, ecoacoustic artworks.
Yeah.
So, you know, the songs alternate with these more kind of, I guess, soundscape-like pieces that you were describing. And so, yeah, there's this idea that the human voice is the human singing. And then you get this music that's like the environment kind of, you know, speaking back or something, or singing back.
Yeah, the kind of interacting. And it is kind of crazy, like, as you're listening, I did find it interesting, not, like, startling, but it does seem like when that human voice does come in, you're, like, taken aback because you're just completely overwhelmed with kind of the natural sound, some kind of this soft orchestral that's just kind of playing into it. And then you hear that human voice, and it's kind of stark. I don't know, was that kind of intentional to kind of maybe break some of the meditative kind of aspects of the music?
It's about communication, right? So it's like evocation and communication. So a lot of my music for the last many, many years was about kind of creating evocative spaces for us to consider issues, but not really like telling anything. And what with Oxalock, because it had such an imperative back when it was written, it was like, you know, we were facing some really catastrophic changes due to global warming. not just in here in Alaska, but around the world. I mean, we felt it first up here, and you know, in the poles, we felt it first. But by 2010, it was having big impacts outside. So what I wanted with Oxalock was to really be communicative. And so the use of the voice is very, very plain. It's like she speaks. I mean, she says there's a text and she reads it and you can understand what she's saying. It's meant to be understood. And then when there's something that we want to like dwell on, like you sink into the singing snow, she'll sing a song called You Sink Into the Singing Snow. And it gives us a chance to kind of reflect on it. But again, the lyrics are always understood by the listener, right? And then you move into that more evocative kind of soundscape, you know, eco-acoustic world. Yeah. And those kind of things are supposed to be juxtaposing. So the one accompanies the other.
Totally.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'd honestly have to sit back and kind of listen and just kind of absorb again.
Yeah. But
yeah, I think it does.
It's tricky because I'm really kind of allergic to the kind of telling aspect of, you know, music can do that. It's like trying to teach you a lesson or something. And I don't really want to create that kind of music.
Like explicitly, climate change is bad.
Exactly. I mean, there'd be, I don't know, I would never do something like that, right? Yeah, yeah. On the other hand, you know, there are stories, like legends, there are, you know, poetics, things that need to be communicated. And so it kind of crosses into that poetry. And then in that case, you really do need to hear the words and you know, music doesn't have to, the words don't have to be understandable in music, of course. Like some of the best voice-based music, you can't understand what the singer or rapper is saying at all.
Yeah,
and totally. It's totally evocative and totally, you know, incredible, but you don't know what they're saying. But I didn't want that. I want it to be understood. It's not about the quality of the voice. It's about the communication. Yeah,
the message that they're getting out. Yeah.
But then, you know, then I'd like to step back and just have this big open piece like Icefield itself, the piece on the album. It's like 15 minutes long of just me playing bass sax on the Harding Icefield, you know?
Is that pretty much what that was?
Yeah. So I took a I took a plane out there. I hired a pilot to drop me off on the Harding Icefield. And I brought all my recording equipment and my saxophone and set it up and just stayed out there. Brought like, you know, survival gear because they didn't know when they could come back and get me, you know. And I just stayed up there and made that piece, you know, right out there on the ice field. It's like an amazing experience. It's a music video on YouTube that I also shot footage while I was there. And it's pretty cool to see it.
That's awesome. I mean, just kind of going back to your roots, eh?
Right. Just playing saxophone outside in the wind. Totally. Yeah. Guess you can't escape your origins, huh?
Yeah, I guess not.
That was my conversation with composer, musician, and sound artist Matthew Burtner. He's currently an artist in residence at the Anchorage Museum. Since we just had way too much to talk about, the online and podcast version of this episode will have my full interview with him. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson.
And that's all for our show today. Special thanks to Melanie Cross and Christy Hedrick from Alaska Sound Celebration. You can find us on the web at alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Ammon Swenson produces the show. I'm your host, Dave Waldron, and thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.